Hello and welcome back to the Yes Ref podcast with me, Ollie Ballinger.
And me, Ben Williamson.
Ben, how's things, mate?
Yeah, good. Yeah, we're two in a row now. So we're still in the same venue as we were last time. Looking forward to another great conversation.
Let's hope our editing team put these back to back, otherwise it's going to confuse everyone.
That could be actually really weird, couldn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, before we get going and introduce our next guest, just like to ask you a small favour if we can. Go and press that magic little subscribe button in the bottom right corner of your screen and follow us on YouTube and on the podcast channels. It would really help us continuing our sports officiating journey and sharing all these wonderful stories with you. Now, let's get into our next guest. We have Luke Doe here from Tri-Tag Rugby, who is a referee manager and also a basketball referee. Luke, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This is going to be great. And talk us through, my first question actually is, tell us about tag rugby. Like,
get it out.
I know, that was really bad, wasn't it?
I tried. I've been the shake.
Talk to us about the sport. Like,
Tri-Tag Rugby, yes.
Talk to us about the sport.
So Tri-Tag Rugby is a modified version of rugby league that was founded in 2009 by Alistair Davies, who's the managing director. And since it started in 2009, it's slowly grown from London to now leagues all the way in Edinburgh and Brighton, with some more additional franchises that are opening up all across the UK in general. So it's a really exciting sport. It's a minimal contact version of rugby league as well, and quite a really social sport, which is really good to bring in the community together to socialise, meet new friends. I've definitely met some new friends since I've been involved as well, and it's really exciting. And then we've also got opportunities to play other countries all across the world as well, which we just had the World Cup last year in Dublin, which was really fantastic as well. So it's a fast-growing sport.
The sport itself, new to the UK, or has it like been globally been played?
So it was, the sport started in, I think it was 1992. It was okay. In Australia, which is called Oztag, which is the biggest tag sport in the world. Australia and New Zealand are the two biggest, and in 2000, I think it was 2000 or 2002, sport moved to the Northern Hemisphere to be played in Ireland, and then we came along in 2009, and then it's growing even more. There was teams at the World Cup from the US, France, Hong Kong, and it's going to grow even more from there.
Numbers-wise, how many teams do we have in the UK? How many players are involved? What does the makeup look like?
So I don't know across the whole of the UK, but in London, I believe there's over 3,000 players that are involved. Wow. Just in the UK alone.
Okay.
Just fantastic. There's competitions played Monday all the way through to Sunday, all across the London area. And then in the other regions, games played Monday to Friday as well.
Tell us a little bit about the game itself. Like, how many a side is it?
So games, depending on the venue, can play from 5-a-side to 8-a-side. The 8-a-side being more of the international game that's played as well, with 5-a-side being more to that beginner level as well.
Do you play them on a big sized?
So we use AstroTurf, 3G, okay. And grass in particular when it comes to the summer venues as well.
40x20, or does it just depend on the?
It just depends on the venue.
And you have these all across London?
Yeah, we've got them all across London.
Okay, awesome. Really, really exciting.
Yeah. So the sport itself, so you said it's similar to rugby league.
Yes,
similar to rugby league. Just talk us through that times. How long's the game? How many? Like, one official, three officials?
What? So one official, except when it comes to the grand final with our national and international level games, where there's two touch judges.
Okay.
But games generally are 2 20-minute halves, or depending on the timing of venues, it's 2 15-minute halves. When it comes to our major tournaments, time kind of drops down a little bit to try and encourage more teams to be involved,
more games played,
sure. So that we can get to the social aspect of it after the tournament's done.
Social aspect is really important, is it?
Absolutely. It's where we get to meet people, interact.
Share stories.
Yeah. It's really, really fun.
What does a typical score look like for a tri-tag rugby game? I appreciate like the standard's going to vary, but like, could you give us a rough indication?
I think roughly between like 15-13
okay.
points scored. So Males get 1 point, try scored, female players get 2 points. You get men's, women's, and then mixed competitions as well. So it brings definitely a whole community involved in the game as well. So
it's so a mix?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Predominantly a mixed sport. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
And is that because there's less physical contact? Yeah. Is that my understanding? Okay, so it allowed them to be able to play together because it's a touch sport.
Yes. Yeah, so seven-a-side's the most common game, so there's has to be at least four female players on the pitch as well. And definitely if you're down by 1 point, you're definitely still in the chance to win it from a two-point female try. So,
Why is the score different for a male or a female try?
I think tactically, I think most one-gendered games or any mixed social game that happens tend to just give it to the best player, with having that advantage and the score advantage to kind of, you have to tactically go through and decide, or if I score here, yeah, we are up one, but the other team might come back and beat us. If we give a female try here, then we're up two, we're in a better position from a playing sort of aspect.
To encourage more females to play, or to play more females in a team?
Absolutely. So last year, Tri-Tag Rugby introduced tag sports to try and grow the sport and grow a bit more diversity across our community as well, to try and get more participation, especially in the women's aspect as well.
Is it predominantly an adult sport?
Yeah. Yeah. So we've only just started looking into the juniors side of tag rugby. Oztag definitely has far more juniors that are involved as well, but for us it's predominantly an adult sport, but trying to grow the sport and have more juniors involved and go from there. We're looking at an under 18 side down in Brighton, so it'll be really exciting.
How does Oz Tag compare to Tri Tag Rugby? Are they pretty similar or?
Pretty similar. The only difference is we try and market ourselves as more of a minimal contact sport, with Oz Tag being more of a more physical. When it comes to the international game itself, it kind of dwells together and there's a mixture of both from there as well, but we're far more of a minimal contact, more social sport than what Oztag is.
So this is what you do for a day job, right?
Yeah.
Tri-Tag Rugby. Yeah. So you manage referees?
Yeah, so manage referees predominantly in London, but when it comes to the national and international appointments as well, I'm heavily involved with that as well.
Man doing that. So what does a typical week look like?
So I guess at the moment go to the gym and focus on my basketball side of things and the fitness side of things first, but then in the office looking at rostering of referees. We just announced today our referee pathway and curriculum for referees from the beginner all the way to the international level. Working on development opportunities for referees and their educational programs as well.
Do you have?
Across the UK, roughly 400 to 500.
And how many do you manage or roster?
London being the biggest, around 250.
Okay. Tiny bit. Enough to keep you going?
Just enough.
And then you dropped in that you're a basketball referee. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
So basketball, I've been a basketball referee since I was 13 years old. So I'm now nearly 27, so that's a little bit. And
most of life.
Yeah, so basically I've just refereed and never had a real job, basically.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, we have that too.
So why did you play basketball when you were younger and thought, I could do this, I fancy earning a bit of pocket money?
I started playing basketball when I was 8. My best friend, Scott, he was introduced to the game to me. His dad was an international basketball referee, which I didn't know at the time, but went through the game, wanted to play a different sport, and then just stuck on from there. When we hit about 13 years old, beginner basketball courses were coming through, and it was a choice either to earn a bit of extra pocket money and referee basketball and have a bit of fun, have a bit of exercise and hang out with friends, or work at McDonald's.
Difficult choice there.
Difficult choice there. So basketball is definitely the option of the two.
Paid the referee at age?
I was in back in Australia, so I would have been paid about $5 a game at the start. So what's that? Maybe £2.50.
Something like that. Bit
of pocket money. So.
Yeah.
But as a 12-year-old, you get excited to getting money at that age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Money to go and spend up. What? So when did you come over to England, and like, were you able to bring your qualification across with it?
So I moved over in October of 2022 because my girlfriend Jacqueline, she had a job working with the Australian government over here, which was quite an exciting opportunity for her. So when I got to move over here, I was able to bring my basketball qualification over here as well and keep moving on the journey for basketball officiating over here as well.
So you're part of like England basketball?
So at the moment in a elite referee program as well over here, trying to look at developing to try and referee in the British Basketball League. I'm currently on the panel for the Women's British Basketball League as well, with the ultimate goal hopefully becoming an international basketball referee, refereeing competitions like the Euro League, and maybe one day refereeing the NBA.
Did you find it difficult transferring? Like, what was the differences from refereeing out there to coming over here to umpire? Did you find that a challenge? If so, what were they?
I think back home, you're around with your friends quite a lot. It's how I got into the sport and continued refereeing. When I moved over here, I didn't really have that sort of friendship group here, so I had to build that all over again. Getting noticed, getting seen by the right people, attending the right courses, and then going from there as well. So it was a little bit of a challenge to begin with, but I'm hoping it's going okay now.
And that by umpiring, that helped you kind of settle in and create new friends, because if you left your friendship group out there and come over here, at least you can meet people with common interests when you're out umpiring with other people, right?
Yeah, definitely. Even in tag, there's still a common interest in refereeing in general, so being able to build some friendships over here, regardless if it's basketball or tag officiating, I think it's been an easy way to settle in, definitely.
So tag official as well?
Only if we're short a referee.
Okay. Fill a gap.
I try and referee here and there as well for a bit of, if I can't get to gym and exercise, I'll try and referee a game as well.
You talked about this new kind of pathway for tag rugby referees. What does that look like?
So we've introduced five different levels to officiating, starting at the beginner level, which is our level one, our intermediate referee, which is our level two, level three referee being our advanced level, our level four being our national level, and then our level five being an international level. I think it's a great introduction of a pathway all the way from a beginner level, and if you want to progress to advance, that's totally fine. If you want to progress to the international level, there's a pathway for you now, which is something that wasn't there before, which I think is really important.
So if I went and did a course this weekend and I got qualified, how long do you expect someone, if they wanted to get to the international level, how long should that take? Or there must be some kind of aspirations from the organisation to go, well, we don't really want it to take 15 years for someone to get there. So what's the expectations to go from newly qualified to the international stage?
I think looking at if you've got a little bit of experience, so if you're refereeing a certain number of games, that helps in that pathway as well. If you're passing your practical assessments and calling the right stuff, if you're passing your theory assessments to get to each level, I think that's important as well. And if you do have a strong background in RFL, or you have a strong officiating background and you can transition quite quickly, then the pathway from a beginner level to the international level can be a lot quicker than potentially someone that is taking brand new, learning just how to officiate, I think, to begin with as well, and progression through there as well. We had one referee that went to the World Cup who had only refereed for a year, reffing tag. Which is quite incredible. Some have taken a little bit longer to get involved, which is totally fine as well. Everyone learns in different ways and takes longer to learn, not just in refereeing, but I think in life as well. So.
Do you see a lot of crossover between rugby league officials or rugby union officials coming over to go, yeah, we'll give this a go?
So we just had one of the referees who refereed at the World Cup, who did one of the grand finals. He refereed in the league below, the Super League, for the RFL. So he's just moved back to Australia to hopefully be involved with the NRL.
Okay.
So we had an official from there. We've got some officials from rugby union as well that have come on board as well. So get a mixture of the two that have come along, especially in the London area where rugby union is such a more popular sport than what rugby league is. In the London area, you do get a bit of both crossover from there.
Yeah, and the southern part of England is more union, and the northern part is more league, generally speaking.
Definitely, especially when Six Nations comes around.
Yes, in
this weekend.
This weekend,
start of the weekend.
Yeah.
That gives you an idea of when we're recording this episode, I guess.
Yeah.
So, with your obviously a lot of experience in refereeing, why or how did you get into a referee management type of role? Did you just found it, or did you went looking for it?
I think I hit a bit of crossroads a couple of years ago where I was deciding what I actually wanted to do in terms of my pathway for my work life and career. Was working a job that I wasn't really interested in, but was getting a decent amount of money as well as refereeing at the same time. So went and looked into sports management, did a workshop from all the way through 2021 where I developed some qualifications and some skills. At the same time, I was able to get a job as referee coordinator for Coburn Cougars Basketball Association, and kind of went on from there as well. So,
was it like being a coordinator at the Basketball Association?
I was definitely comfortable, as basketball was what I'd grown up with. Learned, so I was able to implement a lot of changes that I wanted to see at the local level, which was really, really good and really positive. CEO Ty and my line manager Leonie were a massive influence for me. Developing not just better officials at the local level, but developing skills in the sports management industry as well, which has helped me over here as well.
Yeah, man. Like, was your role then all about facilitating referees, as in allocating them, organising them as part of the roster, or was it more development?
It was a bit of both. So definitely roster referees for not just local competition games, but for junior state level competitions as well, encouraging our local officials to look at state level development courses as well. And then rostering officials to local level games as well. It's a bit of...
And do you think that's what your day job looks like today? You've got a mix between scheduling referees and development, or is it more one than the other?
At the moment, I'd say probably more rostering officials a little bit more.
And how do you find that?
Definitely long. Going grey every second.
Tell me about the biggest challenges with it. Like, what do you find difficult with scheduling referees?
If someone comes unavailable last minute,
yeah,
I think it's always a bit of a headache for anybody, whether that's a local level or the elite level, due to illness, personal issues, stuck in traffic, whatever reason that is. I think rostering and that aspect's always the most difficult part to it as well. So,
and are you able to fix those problems quite quickly? Do you have a good cohort that you can rely on, or?
If I'm available, I tend to try and fix it myself if I can. If I can go down somewhere, I'll fix it. If there's other officials that are keen and interested, I'm able to cover it from there. So we've never had to cancel a game because someone's pulled out last minute. So that's a bonus.
That's a win.
Yeah, that is definitely a win.
Yeah, for sure. And what's the typical fee that a referee would get paid in Tri-Tag Rugby?
So currently, our average official gets about 12 pounds a game.
Okay.
Depending at the local level, when it comes to tournaments being full day, they're looking between 60 to 120 pounds for the day. Some of the considerations for tournaments as well includes the travel. We get quite a number of referees, especially with the major tournaments travelling down. For our national tournament this year, we've incorporated all the officials to stay in hotels, which is quite a new change, so we can all team bond together as a group, eat together as a group, socialise before we get to the business of the day and referee during the day and go from there. So
yeah, sounds really well, I mean, that sounds like what refereeing should be, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, everyone together to
work hard, play hard, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Because we are only all in our own little community, and we love refereeing.
Yeah.
But sometimes you miss the social aspect of it, because sometimes it's turn up at a venue, do your pre-match, whistle the game, thanks very much, see you later. You know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, best friend Scott that I mentioned earlier, he just got engaged back home. So.
Oh wow.
I think 2021, we had four referees that all had weddings all in the same calendar year. So all of a sudden, we're all unavailable at certain points of the weekend we're all going to different weddings all at the same time. So
the nightmare for whoever was appointing that, everyone just closing the same weekend, so you can all go to a wedding.
But you had to worry about it.
What do you like across the two different sports that you operate? Because obviously, from basketball perspective, it's very much been referee coordinator, but mainly been refereeing, and in tri-tag rugby it's been very much the management of referees. What do you see as the similarities between the two sports?
I think the social aspect of it, while tag's a bit more social than what basketball is, I think the socializing aspects with different people in the community, whether that's different referees, coaches, players in particular as well, I think able to build a good connection regardless of where you are as well. So I think the social aspect of sport in general is really important, and something that's really similar both sports, and I think in all sports we will build relationships with different people regardless of whether they coach, play, spectate or referee. So they're all important.
They're tremendous. And if you had the opportunity to change something about refereeing and maybe the management of referees, what would you like to see improved and why?
I think just the community having a better understanding about how much work the referees put in to actually get better. I think I think it was one of your podcasts from season one that talked about people just think referees rock up on the day, referee the game, cause misery to everybody and go home. There's still a lot of work that gets put down that no one sees, and I think that's something that I think we need to have a bit more awareness on overall.
How do we change that? How do we educate people on that?
I think rugby union are doing something about whistleblower. They're releasing something out where they're taking behind the scenes of how the rugby union referees at the World Cup in France interacted and how selection went through. So a bit more transparency maybe in that area, so people are a bit more aware of that. I think that's a starting block. How it goes on from there, I'm not too sure, but I think reminding the community that there are development programs and other areas that referees are trying to do, regardless of what sport, to try and get better. I think more awareness on that, the better.
It's interesting because you see, like, social media, you'll see like top flight players will be all over social media showing that they're training, showing that they're doing different things. But I'm not really sure that too many officials, whether there's a taboo around doing it or whatever, they don't really post out their workouts or, I'm at this development course tonight, I'm training for this tonight, I've spent the last 2 hours rewatching my footage or my game from the weekend of how I can get better. And I just wonder why as officials are we not open enough to go and evidence that we're doing that. The game I had at the weekend, I was officiating on Saturday. Sunday, the footage came through and I spent nearly an hour and 20 minutes going through the clips to write notes to my coach. What could I do better? Marking it red, amber, green. What could be better? What I thought I did really well. But we don't really talk about that, and nobody knows that we do it.
But yeah, you know what?
Players do.
Yeah, what's the stark contrast between the two?
Oh, God.
Well, like, we create a target for our back if we start promoting ourselves publicly. Because the minute someone wants to voice something, that's unwelcome. there you are. But as for a player, okay, sure, they might miss an open goal, right? You know, it happens.
Yeah.
Or they miss a kick, whatever it is. The feeling around that person from a fan's perspective is less emotive.
Next time, as I was...
less emotive than that of a referee. Okay. So,
spectators as well don't want to see the referee on the field and want them to be invisible as such. And when a decision they think is incorrect, it's when they'll arc up and complain about it, or either directly at the official at the local level and being social keyboard warriors, I think it's the term on social media. Yeah. So I think we don't post it because I think we don't want to put spotlight on ourselves, I think we put spotlight in certain areas that, hey, we actually are putting in the work. We don't just rock up and cause everyone a bit of misery on a Saturday afternoon. I think that's important to the community and overall.
It's fits and starts, isn't it? Because I remember seeing, was it Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville went to a Premier League referee training camp Tuesday to Thursday and started doing all sorts of things.
Is that the one where they were trying to do the offside?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And they then talked about how difficult it was and actually started to get some empathy for the officials. And then 2 weeks later, back on whatever program they were on, whether it was the day or whatever, they just kind of reverted back to their, well, it's just not very good, he's just got it wrong.
Yeah, no, look, I think it's important to highlight the work that referees do offline, but I think you make a good point, Luke, insofar as we're here to remain invisible, like in the sense that like we do a good job and everyone's happy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. If you're not noticeable, people don't know who you are on the pitch, court, wherever that might be. As long as you stay invisible, no one's gonna be a keyboard warrior, or come directly at you saying you do a terrible job. You might actually get more people come up and say you've done a great job. So
that's part of the problem, because we're trying to be invisible. Like, we're part of the game, whether you like it or not. We're part of the game. So to break down that perception of, well, you need to be invisible, because then you're invisible, you do something wrong, and you'd be invisible again, to me, doesn't make too much sense. Like, well, it's okay to talk about it. Do you know what? Actually, I think I made a mistake there.
Yeah.
Maybe not at the top flight level, where there's multi-million pounds worth involved. Yeah. But for an official to go, actually, I've reviewed some footage and I'm going to work on this, and this is me training this week, just to show that we don't rock up, cause carnage, and go home. I think there just needs to be something.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thought. What do our listeners think? What do you think we should be doing as referees, as umpires, as sports officials, to be becoming more part of the game? Is the responsibility on us? Is it on team managers, or is it on everyone? Which is, I think, is the ultimate answer. But yeah, interesting. Anyway,
Luke, did some work at the Australian Open, the Olympics Open. Australian Olympic Committee, didn't you?
Yes, I did during 2021 as part of my development and getting some accreditations and some skill development as well. It was only for about, I think it was a 3-month block where I got to work with Lisa from the Australian Olympic Committee that was based in West Australia and the West Australian Institute of Sport. So it was great look from their side of things, how they manage some of the corporate events. So they were looking at some corporate events in Brisbane involving some of the Olympic athletes, even some of the dietary requirements that they need, where each individual needs to sit, some of the speeches that special guests might have to have. I think one of them we got to look at was either the Prime Minister or the Queensland Premier. At the time, because it was just after the announcement of the 2032 Olympics being in Brisbane. So that was definitely an eye-opening experience to see how management, while not so much the operations and competition side of management, how that all functioned, how that worked behind the scenes as well. So it was really, really interesting to see.
How did you get involved in something like that? Where did that come from? Is it something you applied for? Did someone say, hey, Luke, can you help us out? How did that come about?
So when I was studying, it was North Metropolitan TAFE. One of our head lecturers. Her name was Mel. She used to be one of the, or she now is again coaching the Australian swimming team. She's involved with that. And as part of her relationship that she had with the Australian Olympic Committee, as in particular the West Australian part of it, were able to get someone to come in for an internship, and I was one of the few people that were really interested to get involved, and that's how it happened, and was definitely an experience, that's for sure.
And then you went and spent some time at the Women's Basketball World Cup 2022?
Yes. So before I moved over, my partner, Jacqueline, she had moved over in July of 2022, and I'd stayed because I was working at the FIBA Women's World Cup, and was working behind the scenes around the production. So if the sound team needed to play a certain track, I was able to hear behind the scenes of how that went. It was more trying to find fans in the crowd so I can do some interactive work either with the courtside announcer or at halftime or quarter time or at the end of game periods where they had some interaction with the fans as well. So was able to watch the women's gold medal and bronze medal games because I was working involved in that as well. Got to take a couple of photos with some of the WNBA players and Pau Gasol from the NBA as well. So there was a few highlights from there that I could never duplicate again. So it was definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience working at a World Cup in particular. So
I mean, it's quite a privileged position to be in. I mean, like, it's always going to be a world event. And, like, being a part of the team that executed the production, I expect, is quite exciting. So
exciting.
Yeah, it was absolutely exciting, and Jacqueline definitely was a big push, a big part of why I applied in the first place. Because originally, when I saw it, I was like, "No, I'm not interested." And she was a really big push for me to apply for it. I'm glad she did.
Changed your mind?
I don't want to say the nagging. the nagging. I think realizing it was a once in a lifetime opportunity to work. I think it was at the time where I still wanted to look at different avenues of sports management in particular. So an opportunity to work at the Women's World Cup, I think, was an opportunity. I'd be silly not to try and put my name down. And what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You get said no.
Sport you love.
Yeah. So.
And then 5, 6, 7, 8 years' time, you could be there whistling.
Hope so. That's the goal.
Yeah. You never know.
What's the next steps for your umpiring refereeing career then? What have you got to do, or do you know what you need to do to get to the next level?
So currently I'm in the level 4 referee program for Basketball England. So the goal of that is to try and progress towards the Men's British Basketball League. Currently on the Women's British Basketball League, which I have my second game this weekend, which is pretty exciting. The goal definitely is for the men's league, and then from there, consistently refereeing well in the men's league, progress and be considered for the international, or what we call FIBA referee level, or considered to major European basketball competition, in particular the EuroLeague and EuroCup, or even further, go over to the US and try and become an NBA official as part of their pathway.
Is there a lot of off-the-court development that you need to do to progress, or is it generally turn up, deliver, do what you need to do, get people what you need to write the reports that you need? What do you do off the court to get better?
So there's far more off-court work that needs to be done as a basketball official compared to on the court. So I think after the game, if I've got something on my mind, I just need to watch the game straight away, which I try and spend between 3 or 4 hours cutting clips, looking at whether I had a good, well, what we say mechanics in basketball, but positioning. Am I in the right position to make a good call? Could I have handled a certain play differently? I'd cut them all up, send them off to my mentor or referee coach as well to try and get some feedback and some tips to improve and get better from there. As well, really big on my fitness and trying to stay fit as much as possible. So I'll try and, especially last year, I was a bit lazy with my fitness in particular. So I'm working really hard to try and improve the fitness. After this, I'll be going straight to the gym and trying to improve and get better physically as well. And then just finding a bit of time with not just managing refs for one sport and refereeing another, but finding some time to mentally relax and find some peace time so you can still recover mentally, which I think is another area that we don't really think about, recovery and developing as well.
Awesome. I mean, it sounds really interesting. I mean, it's very relatable. The things that we've got to do as referees as well. You know, fitness is always going to be there. And analysing clips ain't going anywhere with this modern world that we live in. So
yeah, definitely.
We gotta get on board with it.
I think 20 years ago, I think fitness may have been the last thing on people's mind. But I think now across all sports, fitness is really, really important. You want to look physically fit. You want to look very athletic. You don't want to look like you just got off the couch or your Chief Wiggin from The Simpsons. So.
And superstitions, is there, like, before a game, do you have any kind of set routines, or is there a song you listen to, or is there a drink or a bit of food that you eat, or anything that you do religiously before a game?
I'm definitely superstitious, not just in basketball, I think in life as well. It's like the gym, I can't eat no later than an hour before. If I eat any later, or if I eat 30 minutes before, I think I'm going to be ill the whole time. So when it comes to basketball, I have to pack my bag. I need to check it 5 times before I leave.
Exactly the same. I'm so bad at that. I can pack it the night before, knowing it's all there.
Yeah.
And then I wake up in the morning and I'll take it all back out and pack it again.
Yeah, I was traveling on the train to a game, and I literally had to open the bag up on the train just to see if I had everything again.
Knowing that it's already in there.
When I had the car back in Perth in Australia, I'd have to pull off the side on the freeway just to make sure I had everything in the bag, because I'd freak out and go, oh, I haven't checked anything.
Whistle or something that's always in the bag that never leaves the letter of the game, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Why do we do that? Do you do anything like that?
No, that's not how my brain works.
Right. You know it's there and that's there.
I pack my bag and I move on.
No, I always think somebody has been in my house at night, taken out my shorts, and then I get to the game and I'll have no shorts, although I know they're in the bag. No.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a comical look.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it just? Right, we're going to move on to second part of the podcast with some quick-fire questions. So these don't have to be as direct as yes or no. If you want to put a bit of sevenths on the answer, you're welcome to. What would you say your biggest achievement is to date?
It'd definitely be refereeing my first Women's British Basketball League game. That's refereeing the professional level for basketball is something that I've aspired to since I was 18, when I made the change from not playing to refereeing fully. So, definitely.
Awesome. The game this weekend goes well.
Thank you.
Your favourite sport, what is it?
I'd be cheating if I used basketball or tag, so I'll use a different sport for viewers to have a look at. Australian rules football, or what's called the AFL.
Okay. Aussie rules.
Aussie rules, yeah. I love that sport back home.
It's
a bit wild.
It's not for me.
A wild, bit of an understatement. I did when I was what we called Auskick. So I played it when I was about 5-6 years old and had one little injury and cried and went, I'll never play again.
Exactly the same.
It's the second biggest sport that's played in Aus.
I believe it's the biggest.
Oh, is it? Is it?
I think it's the biggest sport.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is the biggest, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Yeah, it's up there anyway.
It's definitely the biggest in Perth.
What do you think makes a good what makes a good sports official?
Communication. I think if you're able to communicate not only with your teammates but talking to players and coaches, I think regardless of what sport, communication is really, really important to have. If you're yelling or aggressive towards another person, I think that's not really good communication at all. If you're to the point, show a bit of empathy as well in the way you communicate, I think you make a good official regardless of what sport.
That also goes further to appointments officers, coaches, mentors, people that's going to help you progress as well, right? It's not just communicate well on the pitch or the court or whatever. You have to do.
Yeah, even in tag, especially off the court as well, even after a few drinks as well, is still being able to communicate effectively and appropriately, even when they bring in matters on the field as well. You still want to be able to communicate effectively and appropriately as well. So off-field communication is really important.
Yeah, I think relating to an official, and even kind of like when you're on the court, you signal in how you do it. There's such a perception and influence that's drawn from that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, whether it's with the whistle, whether it's with body language, or whether it's with the voice, communicate in those ways. Yeah,
I think that's something I'm working on, particularly in basketball, with my body language as well. It's something I've struggled with the last few years, so I'm trying to build towards better body language in particular, as you were saying. So,
yeah, I think that's huge for a sports official in any sport. The body language is massive.
Absolutely.
Do you support any team? Any teams? Across all the sports you're interested in?
Australian rules, I definitely do. The Fremantle Dockers. We won't talk about how good they are because they're not. So there's two teams in Perth, the West Coast Eagles, which are the, how could I compare it? I'd say like they're the more dominant club.
Okay.
They've won more premierships. Fremantle haven't won one yet, so.
Yet being the key word.
Yeah, definitely yet being the key word. I hope so, but I doubt it.
Awesome. And who is your sporting hero or heroes?
Definitely when I was growing up playing, Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
In the basketball world. There's a couple of officials that I look to now as kind of who I want to idolize to be a better official, that definitely still go back to Kobe and his how much work he puts in and his mental preparation, how he prepares himself to be the best he can be, I think.
So there's a really interesting clip on him about how he said, like, if you want to beat the competition, it's really simple. So where I think the NBA players, and I might not be speaking very accurately here, but take the segment for what I'm trying to say is, like, the NBA players might train once or twice a day. So they do a training session 10 till 12, and they might do something 4 till 6. Kobe Bryant will do one 4 till 6. He'll do one 10 till 12. He'll do one 3 till 5, and then he'll do one 7 till 9. Like, by the time that day's done, like, he'll have trained four times in comparison to someone training twice.
Yeah.
And then he says, like, when you do that for a year, he said, you'll be leaps and bounds ahead of the next person.
So much, that was the competition.
There was a story that came out about the 2012 Olympics where he had called one of the trainers in to try and have a workout at, I think it was 4 a.m. in the morning, and they had the first Team USA camp in preparation for the Olympics. And they trained from 4 to 7. The trainer had gone to sleep, and then the trainer came back and... Kobe had just finished his training session after the trainer had left. So he had been training from about 4-3 a.m. in the morning up until 12, midday in the afternoon. And he was about to train again for the Team USA trials as well. So it was absolutely insane.
Yeah,
that's nuts.
But, you know, if you love what you do, then...
Yeah, obviously I do something similar. I'm in the gym. Yeah, work about gym at lunchtime.
Yeah, really good.
Something similar to that.
Yeah. Hey, Luke, it's been a real pleasure listening to you. Thank you for giving us an insight into who you are, like what you've done. It's been really interesting understanding Tri-Tag Rugby a little bit better. And we want to wish you the very best with your basketball career. And please keep in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys for having me. It's been great.
As a final wrap up for you, is there any plugs you want to do on social media to get people involved in Tri-Tag Rugby? How do people contact you if they want to get involved, if they're in London and going, oh, I'll give that a go? How do they find you?
If they want to get in contact to get involved with Tri-Tag Rugby, they can contact us via info@tritagrugby.com. We're all over social media on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I don't believe we're on is it Twitter or X now? Elon Musk thing.
Yeah.
So definitely Facebook and Instagram as well, and social media as well. We got taster sessions are being announced all through the summer period, not just in London, but across the UK as well. So definitely if you wanting to not just referee but play as well. Definitely it's a fun sport to be involved with. So
well, thank you, Luke.
Thanks very much.